107.2 FM.
Radio Reverb.
Hey everybody, it's Lisa Moore and Helen Packham for this month's Brighton Business Show here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, available to download as a podcast, listen again on the website, or of course listen to us live. We're in May. Can you believe that we're in May, Helen? I can't believe we're here already.
No, I know. The daffodils are certainly up now. The flowers are in bloom. It's, the year is shooting by. Yeah, it's going so, so quickly, isn't it?
It's going really quickly. And sadly, I managed to get COVID over the last couple of weeks. So I apologise to our listeners now, because I have got a bit of annoying tickle and annoying cough. So I'll try not to cough through the interview, but I can't promise that it won't happen. And we've had a few bank holidays and things recently as well. So this month, we have a fabulous guest, and I will be introducing you to him a little bit later on in the show, the lovely Dan Ford, who is a videographer and also an actor, ex-actor, teaching, actor, teacher. And we're going to be talking about the power of video and actually why video is so important nowadays in business. And, you know, the last couple of years, we've pretty much all had to get used to being on screen, whether that's Zoom, Microsoft Teams, whether it's FaceTime. Seeing ourselves on camera has been quite scary, I think, for a lot of people. Maybe a little bit less so for Helen and myself, because we've been used to it. But Helen, can you remember the first time you ever appeared on video or did a live? And what was that experience like for you?
I can remember it so clearly, Lisa. When I launched this business, I was still recovering from my hiatus from life. I still had an anxiety disorder that I was recovering from. I'd chosen to run away from my corporate career, or I was standing up in front of people every day. I had a real issue with showing up. And when I launched this business and delved into this world of online coaching, which I kind of was thrust into, I didn't really understand what it was all about. I saw that video was so important. And at that time, Periscope was the thing. And Periscope was the first kind of live streaming app. And I remember I was in Facebook groups, and I was getting to know people in Facebook groups, and I was seeing that people were doing video, and I hired a coach, and the coach said, you need to show up. And I remember the first video I did, and I still got it on my phone as a reminder. I showed up, I did it was like a 1 minute video, and it is so unbelievably awkward. It is so cringingly awkward. It's quite hilarious, but it's such a marker for where I have come since then. It was shortly after that first video where I was saying, hello, if anybody wants to grab a cuppa or a virtual cuppa, please get in touch. After that, I did my first live stream on Periscope, and it was 5 ways to balance yourself as a mum boss, or some terrible language that I was using back then. And that was the start of me regaining my confidence. And I will say that after that, then I kind of hit a stride, and then I became, you know, it was a year later, I was using live streams and video as one of the main ways to connect with my audience and my clients. If it wasn't for pushing myself and doing that, those early videos, I wouldn't have then had the confidence to go and put myself for the TEDx. So I feel like it, because I'd been in such a hole of anxiety and not seeing anyone, not doing anything, it was almost like a little step forward in then having the confidence to stand on a stage again, stand up in front of people again. So I remember it very clearly, and I owe a lot to it.
Yeah. And it's really interesting. It sounds like you did video before you did speaking on stage.
Well, when in my corporate days, I did a lot of standing up and speaking. So I trained people on how to present, and I trained people on how to tell stories and all of those sorts of things. But it was very much in the guise of leadership development within a corporate environment.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that is very different. So yes, it was using the same skills, But when I left and ran away from that, I vowed never to do any of that again.
Yeah.
So it was doing this video that sort of reminding me of all those skills. And yes, no, I hadn't really done any public speaking myself. I'd done it, as I say, in the corporate, but I hadn't actually done it for myself. So my TEDx was the first. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think if I look back to the way I did it, I focused on standing on stage or standing in front of people before I went live, yeah, which is really interesting. And I can't remember at all the first time I did my live and what I talked about. I'm sure it'll be on my Facebook page somewhere. So I might, after we do this this show, maybe I'll go back and have a look at it. I do remember that horrible feeling of just feeling so self-conscious about talking to myself.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the hardest thing, is that especially when you're going to do Facebook Live, and I know we're not going to just focus, this show is not about just going live, it's about video completely, but that really strange feeling of being alone in a room and talking to a screen.
Yes.
Just very, very strange. I think the thing about when you're standing on stage or in front of people, you get feedback because you see their body language and all of that. Whereas when you're going live or when you're doing a video, you don't have that feedback. And I'm sure that Dan's got some really interesting thoughts about that whole process as we go through this show. But let's just talk about video itself, not live, just using video as a tool. What do you think is the purpose of using video? I'm going to ask you that first, Helen, and then I'm going to bring Dan in and get his thoughts on that. So what do you think the main reasons are?
Well, again, just got to look at it from a personal perspective. I think video, you know, sharing video in whatever form gives you a direct link to the people that you're trying to connect with, the people that you want to reach, whether you're a coach, a consultant, an entrepreneur, you've got a product-based business, whatever it is that you're selling, you are the forefront of that business, especially if you're a solo person running a business. And it's so important to be the fore person of that business so that people can know, like, and trust you. And I will say that, you know, the past few years of the pandemic, and there was all sorts of stuff that's happened to me personally, I slipped out of delivering video openly. I still deliver video a lot with my courses and things like that to my clients, but actually openly sharing videos online, I've actually slipped away from. And I definitely want to get back into doing that because it's such an important way of connecting, of sharing who you are, of people understanding your personality, of liking that personality, of being drawn to you, thinking, yes, I actually like what this person's saying. And the story, of course, because I know Dan's huge on stories, so am I, so are you, Lisa, in the story that they're telling, how they're sharing, how they got to where they are today and why that's important and how they can help people. The written word is, of course, very powerful. But as we know from how social media is going with reels and, you know, all sorts of different ways that you can share video, it's just the most important way to connect with people. And I think getting over that hump, and I've got to get re-over the hump myself, of that confidence block, of that visibility block of, oh, what do I look like? How do I sound? What am I saying? Is crucial. I don't know. Do you agree?
Yes, I definitely agree. And it's interesting because the three of us are sat here on a Zoom screen and we can see each other. So we are on video. But of course, this will get played on the radio. So actually, it doesn't matter what we look like. But you know, I certainly did my hair.
Yeah, I got the straighteners out today.
Because it makes you feel a bit more confident.
Radio Reverb.
7.2.
Radio Reverb.
I'm going to introduce Dan now. So Dan Ford runs a company called Story Screen, and I know it's a fairly new company, and I've had the privilege of working with Dan, and certainly the story is really important. So Dan, welcome to the Brighton Business Show. It's really nice to have you here. I would really love you in your own words, because I know, speaking to you when I very first met you, the reason you set this business up in the first place and your passion behind it is really interesting. So tell our listeners what you do and why you do it.
Well, I think what you alluded to there, Lisa, was, you know, that story of why I set up the business in the first place. And it's related to what we're, the three of us, doing now, sat on a Zoom call looking at each other's faces. Setting up StoryScreen was a bit of a pandemic pivot for me. And I know a lot of other people have made big choices. I'm sure that has probably been a topic of another show. Big career choices over the course of the last couple of years. And this was mine. And it was based on a number of things. One of them being exactly what we're doing now. That realizing that video in whatever format, whether that's video conferencing or whether that's video as a way of communicating something recorded or live, is going to be here to stay for all of us, and particularly for businesses as well. And I was in a position where I thought there was elements of my background and my experience that I could use to apply to that. So my background is primarily as an actor. That was my first career. And I loved it, and it was great. And I got to do all sorts of exciting things and work with exciting people. And then also have the excitement of not knowing where the next job was coming from as well. So I moved into teaching once I started a family and really enjoyed that as well. I was teaching acting at drama schools and universities across London and the rest of the UK, and found myself running a large acting course at London University. Before I decided to change tack and use the skills of working with people to help them to perform better, to rather than work with aspiring actors, to work with other business people and to combine sort of that kind of performance coaching, presentation coaching with videography, which had always been in my past, even though I decided to go in front of the camera for my career. So that's allowed me to work here in Sussex instead of commuting to London, and work with one business or business person at a time to help them to work out what their story is and how they can tell it on screen. And that can be in a number of ways. I mean, you've already touched on how, on the sheer breadth of video and what it can do. My work tends to be around the story, which I know you guys are both really passionate about. So I'd like to work with people to help out, to work out what that story is, and help them to tell it. And of course, in video, you can tell that in two ways. Primarily, you tell it visually. That's the point of the medium, right? That's why we have all the pretty moving pictures, so that they can really quickly and effectively convey something in a way that perhaps a paragraph of text can't. It allows you to almost skip past the sort of front part of your brain. Just so you see that images that means this, that image that means this, and all of a sudden you have a sort of you derive meaning from it almost instantly. So video helps us to tell things visually, which is my role as a videographer, but also alluding to what you guys were talking about lives, it allows us to meet the person in a real, almost tangible way. It's almost, you know, networking is so important to business. And I see video, as you guys have mentioned, it's almost a way of introducing yourself before you meet the person.
Yeah.
Whether that's your clients, whether it's business to business, you get to be able to show them a little bit of the authentic thing that makes your business unique, which is you.
Yeah. I mean, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for giving us that overview of where you've come from and your background. Picking up on the fact that you've gone from in front of the camera to behind the camera, how's that been for you? How's that transition been from performing to, I suppose you're performing to directing, really?
Yes, I guess that's it, really. I mean, I'd moved through that through teaching as well. So I think I'd already moved into that mode of knowing that actually it's someone else there. And I've got to then give up control and let them do their thing. But it informs part of it because, I mean, to be honest, video... I'm not going to pretend it's easy. It's not. It's nerve-wracking for all of us. You know, when I was an actor, I was much happier on stage because I was in control.
Yeah.
You know, film and TV work, I felt much less comfortable in because that camera does something to you and it makes you think, makes you a little bit more self-conscious in a way that you don't necessarily have to be if you're speaking on stage. You know, you just have the idea of what you're doing and you can get on with it. Sometimes when there's this big metal eye this glass eye looking at you, you can go, well, what do I look like? What do I, am I saying the right thing? And you can begin to be more self-conscious. So video can be tricky in that way. And I guess I've had that experience, but my experience as an actor means that I do know some of the techniques to be able to switch that, that sort of internal viewpoint from looking at yourself and thinking, what am I doing? Am I looking right?
Yeah.
Switch that out so you're focused on what you're doing or who you're trying to talk to or whatever that might be, to take your focus away from yourself and make yourself a little freer and a little more comfortable.
You're absolutely right, because you did my website video for me and we worked together for a whole day. And I remember thinking, I can do this. You know, I stood on stage and I've ran an event and I've done workshops and I do this all the time. But then as soon as the camera is, you know, 3 feet in front of your face, your mouth suddenly fills with cotton wool and you can't talk properly. And it's just really odd that suddenly you can stop, you know, your cognitive doesn't work anymore. And I do remember there was one point where you asked me to, I had to learn a script, and we'll talk about that in a bit more detail. But you said, now say it like this, now say it like that, now say it like this, now say it like that. And then you told me a joke, which made me laugh. And then you said, now say it again. And that was the take that we got, because I was laughing, I'd relaxed and wasn't really paying attention. So I would imagine that the skills you've got from teaching and acting yourself, you can bring that to the people you're helping.
That's certainly what I try to do, because it can be really tricky. And I think, I know from a little bit of market research that there's a lot of experience out there of videographers, and that isn't all videographers. Many of them, like photographers, are actually really good at people, because that's half the job. But having that experience of, you know, having been plonked down in front of a camera, when you haven't really fully formulated what it is you're going to say, and then all of a sudden, like you said, that dry mouth happens, because it is it's an artificial environment. Mm. It's an alien environment, yeah. Especially if it's a set and there's lighting, or aside from just a camera, and it can all sort of fall apart. So, you know, I've heard of lots of experiences where, you know, you've been plonked in front of a camera, not quite knowing what you're saying. And then all of a sudden, before you know it, it's on the corporate website or it's on YouTube and it's gone and you don't have any control over that and you can't bring it back.
Yeah.
So doing whatever you can to make sure that the thing that's happening in front of the camera is as, if not more important than all of the stuff that's happening behind the camera, is I just think it's really vital, because otherwise you end up with just like a really well shot hostage video.
Yes.
You know, and I've seen them. We've all seen them where the lighting's fantastic, but you can tell someone's really robotically reading an autocue or something like that. And it doesn't, that's not the point of it. No. If you can do it, even if it's for 5 seconds, you know, if it's 5 seconds of authenticity, it's worth, you know, far more than, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes of slightly labored speech.
Yeah, that's so true. There are, I mean, I've watched so many videos of people that they just look uncomfortable. You can tell that they're reading that script. And, you know, I know that you believe that a script is really important, especially when you're doing a video for your website or something like that. But it doesn't have to come across as a script, as an auto cue. It has to come across as natural and authentic, as you said.
Absolutely. And sometimes that's pretty hard. Yeah. You know, sometimes the best thing to do is to improvise it. And I mean, it's really different, because video is such a broad tool, and it is a tool. Mm-hmm. So it really depends on what it is that you want to achieve. And that, as you said, for the website, you know, you might want to have some really key things that you need to get across.
Yes.
In which case, let's script them, make sure we're really happy on the language, because that's going to be there for the next 2 to 3 years, probably. Or maybe it's what you're aiming for, or your purpose is different, and that will require a different tool. So maybe a sort of a freewheeling conversation that's captured and then edited is great, or a live where you can just be present and really communicating with the people who are interacting with you. So sometimes the script is the right tool and sometimes it isn't.
Well, it isn't, yeah. And I think actually let's take this step back, because I think what you mentioned there, the word purpose.
Mm.
I know that you feel that that's really important. It's like we all know we should do more video. It's the way the world is going. We've all been told we need to do reels, we need to do this, we need to be seen. But if we don't understand why, are we wasting our time? And I know that you feel really passionately about the purpose of what you want to get from this video is important. So talk a little bit about that.
Yes, I mean, that's absolutely true. And what's interesting that is I've, you know, as a relatively young business, so StoryStream's been going for just over a year, I've had quite a few businesses who I've spoken to who in almost a panic of, oh yes, we really need to do video. Great. Why? what is it that you're trying to achieve? Because there's a kind of, you're quite rightly said, there's an awareness that video is the next thing. You know, we'll hear these stats like the average consumer is going to be viewing 100 minutes of video a day. So this is great real estate. So you need to get yourself in there. Brilliant. I'm going to do that. That's great. But you need to know what you're saying, why you're saying it, and what you're hoping to achieve. And that could be something as simple as I want to get, you know, X amount more traffic to my website, or so many more leads, or even if it's as simple as I want my purpose to be that I am, putting myself out there to be able to introduce myself to my audience and build a wider network. Yes. Because then you know why you're doing it. So then then you can choose the right tool, whether that's frequent lives or whether that's video that you film yourself, or whether that's a sort of slightly more polished product with a videographer, or whether that's a sort of strategy, or whether it's just a few just friendly Instagram reels here or there, or whether that's LinkedIn, or whether that's a website video. You know, if you know why you're doing it, then you can then try and select the right tool to achieve it. And then also, if you are going to be in the video, which isn't a necessity, I mean, I'm in favor of it, but that's not always necessarily the case.
Mm.
Then you know what you're doing on screen. You know what you're saying, why you're saying it, who you're talking to.
Yeah.
Makes it feel much less weird. You talked earlier, Lisa, about the strangeness of talking to yourself.
Yeah.
If you know why you're doing it, then you know who your audience might be. And if you can imagine talking to them, then you become much more free as well if you're on screen. And also it means that at the end of it, you can look back and go, well, this is it. I've tried to set some sort of measurable goal of whether this has worked, because otherwise we can pump videos out into the ether and go, oh, I got some views on that. That's good. Well done, me.
Well done.
Hooray. We decided actually, well, I want to do this specifically to try to target, you know, more traffic or more leads or more sales or grow a network and more views, then you know, it doesn't always have to be numbers based. It can be a slightly more esoteric goal, but as long as you've got something to measure it against, then you can go, well, I feel like this was a success or not.
Mm.
Otherwise, you feel like you can do it, you know, pump it out onto the internet and then just wait. So, you know, having that clear goal really helps you in terms of the planning. It helps you in terms of the actual filming, and it helps at the end as well. I feel like it's a real necessity, because otherwise, you know, you risk that drift.
Mm. It would be really great to understand, you don't obviously have to name names or anything like that, but just to understand the sorts of clients that maybe the most sorts of things that you deal with, or how you help people the most, or how you have in the last few months. Just so anybody listening, and I'm also thinking for myself in terms of, I work with a lot of clients on sharing their story. So then, you know, I could put them your way if they want to put that into video. So yeah, what sort of things do you work with clients on?
By all means, Helen. So, you know, in Brighton, there's lots of brilliant videographers. My niche is slightly different. So I tend to work with sort of people-centered videos. So businesses that have people at the heart of them. So I tend to work with So I've done various work with coaches, other sorts of individual sort of, you know, designers, photographers, consultants, where actually it's about that person, and also a little bit in sort of finance and legal and stuff like that, where actually it's really about having, building that trust in that person, because my work is around people on screen. And that's not all of videography. There are many great videographers out there who will be able to tell stories without, that aren't necessarily about, you know, where I come from, and which is, I think, where you guys sit very, in a very similar way, to about showing up. But for my work, it's often about people-centered businesses. So, you know, legal, financial, coaches. I've also started doing a lot of e-learning stuff as well, because that's really about how you talk directly to your audience. So using a little bit of my experience there in performance and education to help people to construct introductory e-learning videos that sit alongside various modules that help to really get a message across.
Mm. Oh, that's great. And so when you're working with the people-centered businesses, is it mainly helping them to articulate their story?
Mm. Essentially.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the... Yes, it really is. So I look at businesses and try and work out what their story is. I think that's the most important. And it's weirdly become one of the most exciting bits for me that I didn't really anticipate when I started, is working with people and working out what is unique about their story. What does resonate with other people? Because often I'm the layman, and they will be explaining their thing. And they're, as with all of us, whatever business we're in, you know, that's the water we swim in. And we don't see a lot of the time what makes us special.
Yeah.
It's quite nice for me to be able to think, oh, great, this individual is not like no other, you know, is an incredibly affable will writer. And you don't see that often in that industry. So, okay, let's really try and make the most of that and that point of difference. Because, you know, what is unique about your business is invariably you. Yeah. So, you know, presenting that in an authentic way is I think often the best thing that makes you stand out. We are deluged with video. There is so much video right now on all of the platforms. It's pervasive now across, you know, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, you know, it's everywhere, pervasive or even invasive. I don't know if you guys, about yourselves or your listeners, but I often find myself realizing that I've been scrolling through videos. I don't know how I got there. It's just got me again.
Yes.
And I have to stop and actually get some blooming work done. So it's everywhere. But the videos that people click on the most are the ones with people.
Mm.
They're the ones with faces. The statistics are there to prove that. So for me, making sure that, you know, they can be authentic on screen is really important. And sometimes that's to do with working out what the story is, really nailing down the key points, doing a bit of investigation, being really clear about what the beats are that you want to hit, that you want your audience to come away with, because often that's quite finite. But sometimes that authenticity is about actually just capturing someone at work. So the very opposite of all the prep and all the talking directly to camera is being able to do the opposite and just be a fly on the wall for a day and capture something really genuine that's just really happening,
yeah,
which is far more effective than any testimonial, really, because you're seeing it and all of a sudden you believe it. You see that, you know, this photographer has created this environment with this, you know, with these clients. You get the feel and the vibe of it in a way that actually you couldn't with the written word, in a way.
Yeah, and I remember watching one of your videos that you did of a friend of mine, actually, photographer, brand photographer. You were filming as she was taking photos.
Mm.
And what was lovely was that her client, who was having her photos taken, was feeling nervous about it. And you could then get the sense of how Becky, with her photography, was putting this lady at ease. So then for somebody else watching is going to go, oh, actually having my photos taken might be really good fun, because they were having a giggle and they were having a laugh and they were going to some really funky places. And it wasn't that feeling of, oh my God, I've got to pose and I've got to look this particular way. So you can really create the feel of what it would be like to work with that person.
Mm. And for the experience of the viewer watching a video like that as well, it's like they're peering into something.
Yes.
Rather than like a lot of videos where it seems like you're being sold to.
Yes.
Did a little.
Yeah.
I often think of it as, you know, we have quite an intimate relationship with, you know, I'm picking up my phone now, radio viewers, with that sort of black rectangle in our pockets. Mm. And so I like to think of it as you can't have something which is too hectoring or too shouty or too direct, in my opinion. You want to be able to feel like you're inviting them in. So even if you're talking directly to screen, that it's more of a conversation.
Yeah.
It is a sales pitch. Because once you feel like you're not part of that conversation, you're going to scroll on because there's another video.
FM.
Radio Reverb.
Shush now, I'm doing a trailer. For the Folkhampton Radio Show, it's every Thursday from 5 p.m. here on Radio Reverb. My name is Chris Thorpe Tracy, and I will play you an hour of folk, trad, psych, great songwriters. There's usually geese too, but don't worry about them. Let me give your ears a treat. Ooh, that sounds a bit weird. So that's Folkhampton, Thursdays, 5 p.m. on the mighty Radio Reverb 97.2. Okay, you can honk now.
That's a really interesting point, because you mentioned there about the fact that we all get sucked in watching all these videos. How can we, as business owners, stand out in our videos? How do we get seen? How do we stop the scroll?
That is a million-dollar question, isn't it?
Yep.
And I have the answer right here. No, I don't. For me, I don't feel like a stuck record, but for me, it's about being authentic. Mm. And sometimes that's in terms of performance. Sometimes that's in terms of the type of video it is. Again, the statistics are out there that I can't quote off the top of my head, but we are very drawn to video that feels very genuine, that isn't too posed or controlled, you know, because it feels like a snapshot into someone else's life rather than, you know, rather than an advert. So that's where some of the sort of, you know, sort of homemade, you know, smartphone footage really can be quite appealing. It's about having a hook early on, whether that's visual, because often the first thing we see before we press play is is that still image, is that picture. And sometimes that's taken at an arbitrary 2, 3, or 4, or 5 seconds into the video, depending on the length of it. Sometimes that's something that someone spent a lot of time creating or choosing to make sure that it is the sort of the tasty morsel that makes you press play. So I think it's having that hook there at the beginning, and also making sure that you don't lose them. So one of the things that I've taken from acting is that the moment someone realizes when they're watching TV, because we're actually very seasoned viewers of everything, you know, we've been, as a species, we've been watching television for like 80, 90 years. So, you know, we're pretty adept at viewing stuff, even, you know, even whether we're not necessarily cognizant of it, we know. And whether that's on stage or on TV, once your audience feels like, oh yeah, I know what this is, then they've kind of gone. Even if they're still watching it, you've kind of gone. They've kind of... So for me, something that's really important is change, is switching up, whether that's just tone of voice, whether that's moving from talking quite slowly and deliberately to then actually picking up the pace and changing it into something else, or whether that's something visual. So it's don't stand still. Don't stay in the same mode too often. And this is where, and I'm aware I can say this because I'm on a podcast with two women who are very strong advocates of lives. So I feel like I'm allowed to take the alternate view and go, I can't stand lives. I can't watch them. I mean, I can. Sometimes that if they're done well, then that really works for me. If they're really interactive, if they're genuinely interacting with a series of comments that are there, well, that also comes from having already built up an audience. Yeah. Sometimes for me personally, and I know this is entirely subjective, and I look forward to being, you know, to hearing the counterpoint of view. I'll see that a live has happened and is therefore sitting on a feed, whether that's, you know, whatever platform that is. And I'll go, that's 10, 12 minutes. And I know, I feel like I, you know, I I'm not going to commit that time to it.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, I'm talking like a good few years ago now, when it was something that people really did engage with. And it, because it was quite fresh and new, and not as many people were doing it. Also, you're very right in, if you've got an audience and they're tuning in and it's really interactive, that's when it works really well. Like, you know, for training, live training and things like that. And as I say, I used to do that all the time. You know, one of the reasons why I'm reticent to do lives again is because of that. You know, the only people that would tune back in to watch something like that are people that I'm already engaged with. Mm. So as you say, that's a big chunk of their time that they've got to sit and watch something through that they won't choose to. Lots more people, they prefer to hear it through their ears now, you know, in terms of that type of length of content, that type of way to digest information. It's easier to do it when you're running or cooking or driving or doing something else. And so therefore, well, that's why podcasts are really, really beneficial. So you're right. And I'm not actually an advocate for lives. I'm just grateful for them because they were the thing that enabled me to get visible again. Would I go back and think of that strategy now that I know that I'm going to be using video and getting over this hump that I've got into in the last 2 years? No, I don't think so. But I'm going to be doing video in a different way. And I think, as you say, live streams, if you're running a challenge or if you're doing a launch and you've got a focal point, a live stream is really good for that type of thing because it gets lots of people interacting, and then you're giving loads of value and you're leading towards something. Just pressing live and saying, hey, I've had fish and chips for lunch and you know, this is my average day, it's not going to cut it anymore.
That's really interesting, the view about going live, because there is a lot in the, you know, in the marketing world, and especially in the online marketing world, there's a lot of people saying you need to go live 2-3 times a day. And I know for myself as a business owner, you just keep thinking, well, what am I going to talk about? Because I don't want to just come on and say, I've had fish and chips for tea, or my dog's just been sick on the floor, because who wants to hear that? If I am going to go live, I want to at least be sharing something that I think is of value to the people that are going to watch, that is either going to inspire, educate, or motivate people. So I suppose it's coming back to that purpose again, isn't it? What is the reason that you are going to go live?
I think you're absolutely right, Lisa. And having something which draws that audience in so that it's an event. So that this is, you're conscious through whatever channels you have, whether that's email marketing or other social channels, to say that on this date, at this time, this will happen. And sometimes that can be regular. You know, there's one creator that I follow who does a regular one every Tuesday afternoon, and I know when that's going to be. You know, I'm usually at my desk when it happens. I can kind of put it on the side, and if they're talking about something which is interesting to me, then I might, you know, give it a little bit more time. So either that regularity, so that it becomes part of people's, you know, schedules, or it's something like you said, with a purpose that's really special, whether that's a collaboration with someone else that your audience will be interested in, or whether that's an opportunity to interact with other people. Because if you're just talking to yourself, then for me, then again, I would say that because, you know, I'm a sort of purveyor of the recorded arts, that it would be something that, what if it could be something that's just you talking? You could do that to yourself, and then you could do it really well, and then you could cut it down and make it really concise, and you could post that. But if it's got to be, there's got to be some sort of back and forth, if that's you between you and someone else, or between that's you and a specific followers, or it's something which is worth seeing live. You know, I'm here live at this event that is happening now. The other thing about lives, I think, that's quite important, and this relates to what you were saying, Helen, about, you know, how do we get people to stay? I see many lives where actually it's taken as it is, and your software has just put it there on that platform, whatever platform you've done the live on, and there it stays. And as a result, you've still got those first, I don't know, sometimes up to a minute, 30 seconds of just waiting for people to...
That's the worst, when people wait.
Lost them now. Like, I mean, and there's no sense then having that either. Just have it as live and then kill it. No longer have it on your feed, because it makes you look a little bit less professional than the rest of your more curated content. Or edit it so that you... straight in there to the good stuff.
Or just jump straight in. I think there's slightly... I do remember there was a period of time where there was a lot of people doing this, and they were deliberately waiting, and there's a sort of self-entitlement around. I'm only going to start giving my value when I've got a certain number of people watching me.
There's something a little bit tragic as well, though, because it feels a little bit like they'll be here soon.
Just dive straight in. You know, if people want to catch that first few minutes, they can, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and it comes to sort of what I used to think about with, you know, a stage work as well, which is, you know, get on, be great, and then exit.
That's it. Yeah. Don't dilly-dally.
I think the other thing for me that I do find irritating with lives is when the person doing the live then starts talking to the people that are tuning in.
Mm-hmm. The classic mistake of being drawn into the comments.
Oh, yeah. And it's like, oh, hi, Sarah. How are you? Oh, really nice to see you at the weekend. I was such a good... Didn't we have a great time? But it's okay one off. You know, you might go, hi. Glad you're watching. But then move on. Don't continue trying to have this conversation with somebody who's not even there as part of it. Mm. I get very irritated with that.
Or conversely, it's all about the comments and you've made it about the comments. So rather than engaging with them on a sort of personal level, you're saying, and we have a comment from such and such who's asking this. Well, this is a really good question. Yeah. Here's what I do to them. So you're really engaging with them substantively, and it gives people a reason to turn up and comment and feel like they're actually having a bit of back and forth with you.
Yeah, that's engagement. But you made a really good point, Dan, about if you are going to do a show up and do a live, and it's not so much about interacting with people, then do it on video instead. I think a lot of people went through a stage of, oh, I'm just gonna be authentic and press the button and go, and I'm going to have a few bullet points and they're going to guide me. And doing a video, I'm going to have to do it 20 or 30 times to feel happy with that. Whereas if I just press the button and go live, then I don't have to worry about that. However, I think that maybe we might be moving back, you know, into, if you're going to be delivering some content and you want to deliver a message and it's not so much about the interaction, do it well and make it look good and do it as a video.
Yeah, absolutely. And also there's, you know, even within videos, we see it all the time. What's that phrase? Hi, guys. I'm just jumping on here to tell you, yeah, you've done this. This is about your eighth take. You're not just jumping on here. This is perfectly created. That is the sort of where we've been fished by the sort of Instagram culture of immediacy and sort of faux authenticity.
Radio Reverb.
7.2 Radio Reverb.
So let's talk about, you're going to film a video. What are the steps, Dan, to creating the perfect video? I know that the perfect doesn't exist. I hate that word. But what are the steps? So somebody has decided that they're going to do a video. Talk us through briefly what those steps are.
It's got to be going back to basics. And I know we're circling back to something we said before, it's got to all stem from purpose. It's got to have, you've got to have an objective. And then once you have the objective, and again, this is acting terminology, but I'm afraid I can't find a better way of expressing this, and I end up applying it to everything. If you have an objective, you can then choose the actions to be able to help you complete that objective. And there might be a number of choices there. There won't be a perfect one. So having that objective in mind, I think, is key to then everything else lining up behind that, and then knowing, oh, well, if that's my objective, then, you know, then I can choose the right tool for the job. It's a short video. It's a long video. It's just me talking to camera. It's testimonials from clients. It's fun. It's serious, whatever it is that it needs to be. So, you know, that's my kind of like, you know, get out of jail card on that, answer that question, is that it really depends so much on what it is that you want to do. I would say some golden rules are, don't overstay your welcome. Don't feel like it has to be perfect. It's always better to be authentic than it is to be perfect.
Absolutely. Otherwise, love that.
Yeah. Otherwise you get into, you know, the sort of perfectly staged hostage video.
Yes.
Then it's all wonderfully made and you've got all the words right. Fantastic. Well done you. But you might have got all the words right, but at what, you know, here I am bumbling over my own words as case in point, but at what cost? Because you want to really feel like you're there and your audience want to feel like you're there and talking to them. So it doesn't have to be perfect. You don't have to worry about perfection. In fact, actually, we love those videos for all of the imperfections. One of the things I used to say when I was teaching acting was that when students were really stressing about getting it right, and I think it's interesting culturally. I think we're only more and more worried about getting things right and perfect. So students would worry about getting things right, and I would always say, no one has ever left the theatre going, "Wow, that was correct."
That's so good. I really love that.
You know, that's brilliant.
And it's the same with video. No one's gone, well, that was all just...
correct.
Correct and perfect. Because they don't know what the script is. They don't know what you're trying to get. They want to be there for the immediacy, for that moment when you connect, when you go, oh, my God, did you see that moment when, you know, on stage where she looked at her like this and then... that slap, I didn't see that coming, or whatever it was. God, it's like I'm describing Dynasty. What is this show? But you want to be able to feel like you're there. And sometimes that comes from not rehearsing it too much. Sometimes that comes from really being clear about everything that you need and storyboarding it.
Mm-hmm.
The storyboard. It can be really useful because then once you get that storyboard out there, Miro is quite a good online tool for that, I find, for whether that's any form of presentation or discussion, or I use it for storyboarding videos, to be able to look at it all and go, what do I not need? That actually, if it just, you know, if what are the, are there like, you know, a series of pictures that just tell that story better?
Yes.
Stripping it back.
Absolutely. I think back to Steve McQueen in The Magnificent Seven, who apparently was, you know, this, you know, big Western with various stars and Yul Brynner and stuff like that. And Steve McQueen is going through the script, crossing out lines. So he has less dialogue. I can do that with a look.
Mm.
I can do that by getting off my horse. Less is more. Mm. Because it can be much more succinct. And that's the thing about video is that, you know, I love a long podcast. I love a nice, long, leisurely podcast where I can feel like I'm listening to the friends who are in my ears.
Yes.
But video, you know, isn't like that. We haven't paid a ticket to see, you know, 2.5 hours of Avengers Endgame.
No.
You know, we're here to sort of, so maybe, so what is the most direct way, you know, that pictures and that sharing that, those authentic moments can get across what it is that you want to get across.
Yeah, and it's interesting because as you pointed out there, it doesn't have to be about the person saying something. It could just be the video that scrolls from, you know, maybe you're running a retreat, so it scrolls to the beach and to the hammock, to the food, to the fire pit, to the meditation practice.
Yep.
In 30 seconds, and you're like, I'm there. I want to go because it just all looks so beautiful and relaxing and calm.
Absolutely. It's the house renovation.
Yeah.
You know, that's pushed through and shows the different elements off in a way that's slightly more appealing, slightly more engaging than still photography. And I think also part of the appeal of a video, especially when it comes through social channels, is because you know you're not in for the long haul.
Mm.
You know it's going to end. So, you know, so being able to plan that out so that you know you've got your beginning, middle, and ending.
Yes.
You have, as I alluded to earlier, you're not staying in the same mode or the same color. I'm using color sort of figuratively as a sort of metaphor. you know, it's not just all one thing. You move through, you know, a few different gears within however long it needs to be. And that might change depending on the format. If it's a website video, then people have come to your website. You've got them for 2 to 3 minutes. If it's on LinkedIn, perhaps you've got an audience who will sit with it for longer. If it's on Instagram, maybe less. So, you know, knowing, you know, planning your time a little bit. Within that, you can then improvise and bumble and be honest. But then within a structure, I think, is usually a good way to go.
Yeah. So from a practical point of view, then, if somebody wants to do their own video, tools, techniques, lighting, cameras, microphones, what do they need?
Yeah,
I know that's a really big question.
It can be daunting, but there are, and I won't go into them all here, but you just throw a stone at the internet and you will find all stuff, all over, you know, YouTube and Google, all sorts of useful kit lists for creating your own video content, usually at a fairly decent budget. You know, you can get a Bluetooth microphone, some fairly standard lights, and you know, you're away. And most smartphones these days have, you know, video capability that's really good enough. It's about knowing how to use them, which can take a while. But, you know, depending on the sort of video that you want to create, you know, you'll have the technology. The difficulty is getting used to it. Mm-hmm. So that your head is not in the technology, your head is in saying what you're trying to say, rather than you're there, but really worrying about the lighting. And really, what's that light on the microphone doing? And, you know, doing enough so that you're present. And we see this all the time, right? We see this with any of us, we, especially when things are being recorded. You see people getting better at it. You know, we all remember from, you know, watching, I don't know, Neighbours, as it was for me, when they introduce a new character, new actor, and they're like 15, you go, oh my God, they are awful. And then, you know, 10, 15 years later, they're actually really good. And they're in Hollywood because they've done it loads and loads of times. So sometimes it's the same. The thing about video is that you then don't necessarily have to broadcast all of them early on. You know, you can do, and it's almost like what you were sort of alluding to earlier, Helen, you know, at that point in your life, you know, using Periscope was a great training. And video can be a really good training for public speaking, for getting your point across, or even just for, you know, talking, networking, presenting generally. It's really tough to begin with because we don't look how we think we look. We also never sound how we think we're going to sound because of the biology of the human body. We get resonance from inside our own skulls and our bodies, and therefore our voice always sounds thinner and reedier when we hear it played back. And that just doesn't change. So there's all sorts of getting used to it that you can do, which can be quite uncomfortable. But the thing about recording it and playing it back is if you're brave enough, then you can use that to work with. And then once you're very happy with the technology, once you're happier with, you know, how you feel, then you can get out there. Again, it doesn't have to be perfect. Don't feel like you're just going to keep recording these takes until you get the perfect tape. And then I'll post that. But you know, the option is there to be able to work with it so that you get au fait with the technology and delivery. You know, you get a free hit. Digital is cheap. You know, it's not like it was in the old days. You don't have to take it to Boots.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. And what about nerves then? You know, somebody's gonna they've done all their purpose, they know why they're doing it, they know their objective, they've maybe scripted it, worked out the technology and things like that, and then the nerves kick in.
I think you've got to go back to who you're talking to and what you're doing and being specific with the script. So it's all about placing your focus elsewhere, whether that's whether you've scripted it or whether that's just your talking points, so that your focus isn't on you. It's always what it's about. Various acting techniques, and God, there's loads of them. There's been millions of books written about them. All of them come down to really one thing, which is putting the focus on something else other than yourself. It's tricky on video because often, if you're doing the sort of video where you're talking directly to camera, then there's no one else there. So you are literally looking right back at yourself, which doesn't help. So sometimes it can be turning that off.
I was taught a little tip by actually Helen and I both know this guy, and he talked about putting a post-it note over the front. Or I know certainly in Zoom meetings, when there's lots of people in a Zoom meeting, I will switch my own view off because I feel I can be more me.
Yeah,
I'm not constantly looking at what does my hair look like and, you know, silly things in the background that, you know, catch your eye.
Yeah. Yeah. So something as simple as that can be really, really helpful to help you feel just less self-conscious and let those nerves go. But it's always going back to focusing on who it is you're talking to, whether that's imagining them. And sometimes that can be tricky, but, you know, to work on that imagination so that you've got a clear idea of who it is that you're talking to, so that it feels more like a conversation to you. We've all got better at Zoom, but it's still tricky because you don't have any of those social cues that you have there when you're really talking to people to know when to stop talking, which is why I'm probably still talking now, but still, you don't have those. So it can be really, you feel like a bit of an echo chamber, like you said, Lisa, talking to yourself. So having a really clear idea about who it is you're talking to and what they might be thinking or saying back to you. So you can hear what you've said, listening to the words that you said and thinking, almost like you're hearing it like you are both yourself and the other person in the conversation, so that you can hear it and, you know, and imagine those responses and take it more into a conversational tone rather than constantly thinking, oh God, am I doing this right? But also practice is doing it again and again.
Yeah.
You know, we'll have all got better at Zoom and this, and it's essentially the same thing. You know, we're all, you alluded to it earlier, we're all broadcasters now. So it's going around again, being clear about what you're saying, who you're saying it to, and knowing that you've got an ending in sight. Otherwise you can ramble on forever.
Yes. I think that's really interesting. Having that ending and knowing that there's that point to stop. And breathing is always a good tip.
Absolutely. Yes. being in your body a little bit more. So something as simple as just getting out of your head and into your body, doing all of that stuff that you know, Lisa, I know with your background that you know so well of you know, getting up, just jumping up, just a few moments of vigorous movement, just jumping up and down, flinging your arms around, doing something like that, grounding yourself with your feet on the floor, taking some deep breaths in, all of that stuff. You know, it's all nerves and anxiety are a chemical and biological response, aren't they? So you can do things biologically that will aid you with that too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's been really great talking to you, Dan. Thank you so much. If people wanted to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Well, my website is storyscreen.co.uk, and you can find me, Dan, at storyscreen.co.uk, and on social channels at It's Storyscreen.
Fabulous. And I know that if anybody is interested in talking to you, you offer a free consultation or discovery call.
That's right. For any Radio Reverb or Sussex Business Show podcast listeners, I'd be happy to have a chat. So please just get in touch via the website or the email that I just mentioned. And I'm happy to give a free consultation on whether video is the right thing for you and what sort of tools you might need. And that might be me, might be something else, but I'm happy to have that chat.
That's fabulous. Thank you. It's been really great talking to you today. So this is Lisa Moore and Helen Packham for the Brighton Business Show here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, available to download as a podcast or listen again on our website. And Helen, I hope you have a really nice May and looking forward to the summer coming and
some
bright days.
Yeah, and we'll be back next month with another hot topic and another wonderful guest. We'll be right back.
my arts.
Radio Reverb.
Radio Reverb.